Log Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be amazing people. Share poems that reveal duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, sinners, saints, and everyone in between, and the mixed up people like me. I am Afasiana, and I'm from Late Night Poets on Blog Talk Radio. This is part of a group on allpoetry.com. So if you are in the group Late Night Poets, you can follow along and read the poems with us, but it's not a requirement to be a part of the show. Pam, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm starting to calm down. You know, I'm just so not a good last minute person, and my internet went out, and it was like, you know, 11:31 my time, you know, 1 minute past showtime, and I called in, I put in the code that I'm supposed to put in, and the dumb mechanical voice bitch said, "I'm sorry, I did not hear you put in at least 4 of your numbers." And I had put in all of them. And I tried it a second time, and she told me the same thing. So then I had to hang up, call back, and try a third time. And And thankfully that worked. But no, I am otherwise doing good, and I am looking forward to the show. Great prompts that you have. Looks like you got some wonderful inspiration. And, of course, you know, getting to hang out with you and other cool poets is always fun.
It is fun. I'm glad that it ended up working for you. We had some technical glitches last week, so I was like, oh, no, not again.
Right? You just never know. You just never know what kind of crazy fun is going to be happening. But I do have a couple people to bring on, so I'll go ahead and do
that. Awesome.
Yeah. Babbler and
Hey, Babbler.
Hello.
Hey,
welcome Mark. To both
hey.
Of you.
Hey. Hey, guys. Hi. Glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Awesome to have you both here. All right.
Have
so you
to
guys
here.
Are going
to
be first. Babbler was keeping me company on the board as I was panicking, so let's go.
It's always good to have someone keep you company while you're panicking.
I love, even when she's making fun of me, because, yeah, that was quite funny. The sinners, sins. Sinners and saints.
It's
there
going to
one
be an extra fun show tonight.
Evening?
No saints allowed.
No saints, just all the sinners. Well, I haven't got my new glasses yet, and I broke mine, so I'm wearing my, like, super old ones from, like, 6 years ago, and I'm half blind, so I get my words extra mixed up right now. So
I
for tonight...
How those glasses with old prescriptions make you feel like you're the wrong height.
Yes! It's
mine
so
do.
Weird. They really do. And they're a little bit bent, so, like, one eye sees better than the other one. I'm just... I always feel like, am I tilting over? Maybe. Who knows? It wouldn't be out of character for me. our prompt for tonight is, one day your skull will be as empty as a conch shell on a fence post, full of wind and gentle quiet. Today it's a cauldron of ghosts. Flesh and electricity, water and memory, a machine that makes reality. Now, here, your skull is the garden where fact flowers into meaning. And that was by the Crypto Naturalist, who I just follow them on Facebook. I don't really know who they are, but they post really interesting things. So I'm always happy to discover people with cool sayings and pictures that can possibly be prompts. And they inspired me. So we're going to start with Babbler's poem. And Babbler, whenever you're ready, I have you up.
All right. I got a little tangential with the theme. That's what happens when I write and rewrite. But this is Lemons. I don't make plans for tomorrow. Tomorrow might not make it here. At least, if I didn't make plans, it won't be another letdown, another ghost to stir up a bad taste in my mouth. Most of my yesterdays didn't pan out. Half-baked attempts paid for in sweat, sold in discount stores on the side of freeways, perfectly on brand. My eyes are locked on the empty glass while my hand is above squeezing so hard on that damn lemon my knuckles might rupture. A few measly drops is a long haul from full. I'm not going to pretend it's all right or that I got a fair shake. I got a shit shake, but there are a lot of us out there who got shit shakes. Some still think theirs is chocolate. I do have a glass, so I'll squeeze these bitter lemons with all I've got and plan on drinking it when I'm done. If I'm lucky, tomorrow will give me tequila, but I ain't counting on it. End poem.
Oh, my gosh, Babbler, I love that so much. It played up on, like, the life gives you lemons, make lemonade, and the glass is half full or half empty, but it did it in such a creative and unique way. I absolutely love the way that you handled that, especially, like, you start off, another ghost to stir up a bad taste in my mouth. Like, that's, you're connecting in with the prompt there. And when you say my yesterdays didn't pan out, you know, so why make a plan for tomorrow if the plans never quite go? saying perfectly on brand just made me laugh because I was saying toppling over is kind of my thing. That's me on brand. And the way that you describe things is just so great. I got a shit shake, but there's lots of us out there that got shit shakes. Some still think theirs is chocolate. Oh my gosh, that is so good. I absolutely love this. I hadn't pre-read it, and just I was giggling the whole time. I was on mute, so you couldn't hear me, but that was awesome. Mark, would you like
to
comment?
Yeah, this is a wonderful poem. What I like about your the way that you're able to turn ordinary language into poetry, really strong poetry, is just beautiful. This is a beautiful poem, but it also reads as if you're sitting there. You know, some parts of it, there's lovely imagery in it too. But the tone, it was a great read you just did too. I thought I was sitting at a bar listening to you talk about things, and that's the kind of framing of this poem. It's just beautiful the way you go through and the strength and perception and the images with the lemon, the shit shake, the if I'm lucky tomorrow will give me tequila. It's just a very smart and moving poem about, you know, what's happening to a lot of us, maybe most of us nowadays. Really strong poem, beautiful.
Thank you.
Great comment. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I enjoyed this. I liked how it was about a serious subject, but done in such a clever and humorous way. And, you know, how I really neat the way you talk about realizing that, you know, life is filled with lemons, and not only lemons, but life gives you shit. And as you said, that one line was just funny about how some people still think it's chocolate. And I don't make plans for tomorrow. Tomorrow might not make it here. And, you know, just really thought-provoking in the idea of, you know, just living one day at a time. So very cool, right?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I completely agree. It was great. What a perfect way to start the show. Now, Mark, if you're ready, we can do yours next.
Right. Drunkard, awaiting a bus. Slumped and dreaming in three or four bars, riding elevators to the stars. Staggering out sleepily, casual and amorous, leaned against a lamppost, awaiting a bus. Cheerfully hopeless, ready to be friends with whatever this moment of dulled living sends. High buildings loom around me. They want no part of me. Voices murmur faintly, as if to reprove me. Small gods and street lamps fall through cold air steeply. The beloved that lives in alleyways withdraws more deeply. End of poem.
Ooh, great read. I love the way it has that kind of like dark, dreamy quality to it. Cheerfully hopeless is a really awesome, why can't I think of the word, oxymoron, where it's like they're opposites, and yet at the same time it works. Ready to be friends with whatever this moment of dull living sends, to be friends with whatever is happening, like to just accept it and go with it and make the best of it, even though you feel like it's not going to be a great thing that you're befriending there. The description of the high buildings and the alleyways, and it all just like sets a really interesting tone. Very cool. Pam, what were your thoughts?
like this. It has very realistic imagery, especially because I used to live in Austin, Texas, and take the bus everywhere, including some of the not-so-good parts of town. And, you know, so it makes me think of that. And it also makes me think of just, you know, the reality of life and how it can feel almost like, as you say, just cheerfully hopeless, you know, as if it's looming over you. And just really an excellent brevity and very well done.
Agreed. And Babbler, what were your thoughts?
Well, I really liked this piece. You know, I grew up pretty poor, so I grew up in bad part of town. I've also frequently worked night shift in my you know, working years, and so I've encountered a lot of these people. And the first part, you know, observing the drunk person waiting for the bus, you know, when I see the line cheerfully hopeless, ready to be friends with whatever this moment of dull living sends, I picture like that smile, the smiley kind of slap happy drunk. You know, there's nothing really for them to live for, but here they are. And yet they're smiling, you know, and yet they're happy, at least in this moment. And then the second part of the poem takes me to, you know, inside their mind where they're seeing, they're walking through this city that doesn't want anything to do with them. You know, they hear the voices mumbling, telling them how worthless they are. You know, and the joy withdraws more deeply. You know, I always kind of imagined, you know, those happy drunks that you see on street corners feel sad when they're alone. And I think this really kind of gets at this. I think this is a really kind of heartrending and like solemn piece. I really liked it.
That was a wonderful comment.
Great comments. Yeah, great comments. Thank you.
All right. So our next poem is You Find a Cause by Frumious Reeds. And I'm going to read that for her. I can feel your lack of infinity compared to the millennia of existence stealing through the veins I've made my home. Your souls, lonely, begging, loving, living, are all familiar to me, and I will warmly cradle you in my arms when your time comes. Tick-tock, I will gather the condemned soldier ripped from home. His last letter still lies where his body fell, trampled in mud, surrounded by his brothers of war. They cry when they see each other at the gates, laugh because at least they're not alone. I will take the man who flew so high, shattering his heart into my waiting hands. I still hear him screaming desperation, thinking I was more forgiving than life. Yet, since when has death ever been kind? The lost daughter who runs from me, hide and seek. Her spirit still shrieks for her mommy to chase the monsters away. You find a cause, and you serve it. My cause is the worn souls I cherish. And I feel you crumble into fine dust, coating my fingertips lightly as I hang your atoms in the heavens and let the beauty of your souls shine. End poem. I found this really interesting that it's from Death's perspective, and it reminded me a little bit of like the Valkyries in Norse mythology because it's this woman who swoops in and takes the dead and brings them to the afterlife and looks after their souls. But it has like an aggressiveness to it and a playfulness that's a little different than I would normally hear in the Grim Reaper stories. I really liked the way that she did it in terms of her spacing, where she made some really interesting choices, and it has like this rounded flow to it. And then when it's something that's being said. It's in italics. I thought the format of it was really interesting and made it easier to read. Mark, what did you think of this poem?
Well, I thought that was a great comment you just made. You know, like calling out the Valkyrie aspect, which hadn't occurred to me, but it's a great metaphor. This, because it has that feeling of somebody hanging almost in the heavens or hanging above and observing what's going on with all the souls. But it turns around the Valkyrie image, and they grab these dead warriors and drag them to, you know, warrior heaven. But this is compassionate. It's just over this poet's perception, perceiving what's happening in humanity, all the victims out there kind of hovering over the scene with this lovely language, your soul's lonely, begging, loving, living. That's beautiful and are all familiar to you, and I will warmly create you in my arms. And it's very consoling poem. It's very connected with human experience and all the victims. The soldier, the lost daughter, just deeply engaged, kind of visionary involvement with all the human suffering out there. Just a beautiful poem.
Great comment, thank you, Mark. And Babbler, what did you think of this poem?
I thought this was really interesting. You know, looking, the reaper looking at the collecting of souls as a duty. You know, you find a cause and you serve it. My cause is in the worn souls I cherish, and I feel you crumble into fine dust. You know, she serves this cause, and it's not about being kind, and it's not about being forgiving. It's about, you know, cherishing souls by portaling them across, which I thought was really interesting, this dutiful reaper. And I think, you know, it also highlights the vast array of people who die. You know, there's no specific age or reason. You know, the examples given here being the soldier, the suicide, and the child. You know, some go to it unwillingly, some go to it on purpose, and others go reluctantly at all periods and times of life. So I really thought this was an interesting piece, an interesting perspective, and it was a great read.
And that was a great comment. Thank you, Babbler. Pam, I know you had to step away for a minute. Did you hear the poem?
I didn't hear it, and I really didn't have time to read the whole thing. So I'll just say that I really enjoy Fromius Reads' poetry, and I'm happy to see her contributing to our contests and shows. So, very cool.
Excellent. Are you able to read, Pam?
Yes.
Awesome. So I put one up called Flicker by River Blue.
All right. I have to refresh my page. There it is. Oh, my goodness. That's a cute dog that I think just popped up. Oh, okay. I see Frank put it up. All right. And the dog looks like a baby deer. I'm sorry. I'm slightly distracted by the absolute cuteness of that. All right. This is Flicker and Roar by River Blue, and it goes like this. Blue topaz waves rush the cavern quiet mind, where a galaxy reflecting on harbor waters peers through abandoned eyes. White masthead lights of distant mercy ships circle the last known location of that sundressed summer morning. Flickering notes of whale song echo within the sacred sanctum where music once swelled. Memories ghosts give of mighty azure roar of grief at the absence of her sentence. End poem.
great read, Pam. I really enjoyed this, especially the way that it talks about the flickering notes of the whale song's echo, and the music once swelled, but it's no longer there. I thought this was absolutely beautiful. Rush the cavern quiet mind, where a galaxy reflecting on harbor waters peers through abandoned eyes. There's something really gorgeous in this, even though it has a darkness to it. I think that note of grief at the absence of her sentience is absolutely wonderful. It's that sadness for the lost that recognizes the beauty that used to be there. Very nice. Babbler, would you like to start our comments for us?
I really like this. This is like contemplatively solemn, you know, just looking at the end of a life as the onset of a sunset, you know, watching the sun go down and the stars come up and mourning the loss of the sun, but knowing that, you know, the day goes on, you know, there'll be a new day. But not for this particular day, as a metaphor for the ending of somebody's life. And that kind of like almost sacred homage. It's really beautiful. And I just love how quietly contemplative it is. It's a lovely piece.
Well said. And Mark, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with all the comments. It is really beautiful, and as Babbler said, quietly contemplative. It's a very powerful and striking poem. It's about time and space, and where we kind of blend into this. She turns the whole universe into something almost mystical. Blue topaz way, the reflections of galactic light off the harbor waters, translating into blue topaz waves that flood the mind. And then the white mast headlines of distant mercy ships circling the last known location of that sundress and memory. That's a memory of a particular moment in time of a life. Just binding all the parts of consciousness in this kind of spiritual mystical galaxy of spreading light and swelling music. And the conclusion was beautiful, the kind of background noise of the universe expressed a mighty azure roar of grief, you know, what's up in the sky, and that still continues after the absence of sentience. You know, the universal light is still there that she and we all participate. It's lovely, and there are a lot of creative confidence in the way all these images are set and put together to show this kind of mystical, vibrating universe we're all part of. Beautiful poem.
That was a beautiful comment. I think that you're right in your interpretation, and I agree with all of your description of it. Well done. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, this is just absolutely beautiful, wonderful imagery. I really like where she talks about, or writes about that last known location of that sundress summer morning. Like, you know, that the last time you are with a person, or you have that connection before they're gone. And I like that she brings up the music within the sacred sanctum where music once swelled, and the whole idea that now the music is gone, so things are just not the same. Just beautiful and brilliant imagery and very well done.
Agreed. Babbler, would you please read the one by Zombie Aesthetic?
Absolutely. This is Poking at the Brain by Zombie Aesthetic. Keep the eye trained upward, open. Run a nail along the waterline. Swipe aside budding lower lashes and push in. Wiggle. Work a finger in the socket. Behind the jelly, press again against the bone into the open of a skull. Fold the hand, pinky to thumb. Sit into the wrist. Reach and brush, hardly touching. A soft gaze, a pulse against my face's cheek. It is inside of my head, though I cannot reach it. A thought. End point.
Very well read. Thank you, Babbler. This in some ways gives me like the heebie-jeebies because someone who's had brain surgery, there have been hands in my skull, and that is like a bit of a soft spot for me. But at the same time, I really, really love the that last stanza where you're trying to reach a thought. And I do, because of my brain surgery, tend to have this problem where I'm in the middle of a thought and I lose it, and it's like physically stuck somewhere inside me, and I just want to reach in and move my steel plate and like let that thought through. So I don't know, I connected a little bit too literally with the idea of reaching in and finding a thought, but I thought that was a really creative poem, and for something as gruesome as, you know, sticking your finger through your eye to get to your brain, it's worded quite lovely. So thank you, Zombie Aesthetic, for that poem. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this definitely has a strong and visceral imagery that does kind of give you the heebie-jeebies. But I like that it makes that whole point of trying to find that thought, trying to hold on to something. I thought it was a wonderfully creative write and very well done.
I agree, Pam. And Babbler, what did you think?
It's delightfully graphic. I sometimes write this style where I just get really, like, pore over the details of an action in, like, gruesome detail. It's just fun to explore. And so I really love this and appreciate that. The piece by piece moment, almost like instruction manual on how to jab your finger past your eye socket and into your brain. And then the end where the whole purpose is to try to grasp the ungraspable, you know, to grab hold quite literally of an idea or a thought. I just loved it. I thought it was great.
Well said. And Mark, what were your thoughts?
This is so original, and it's so beautiful, and thought all the comments called out, you know, the basic thing of, you know, our physicality. You guys all kind of described that, our physicality, and trying to capture what's inside of us. And it's almost walks us through it. I mean, it is strange, you know, kind of the finger nuzzling against the rubbing against this ball of jelly, the eye, and trying to relate to the deep conscious vision that we have, and the sensation of touching the cheek, and just it's an exploration of the strangeness of us as physical creatures, looking in a. And it goes through a deliberate exercise. So it's almost like looking in the mirror and touching yourself and say, how can I see with this ball of jelly and get such – that's what I got out of it. How can I touch this bristly cheek, at least for a male, and get a thought inside? And how do I make the relationship? It's a lovely exploration. It's very original. It's a beautiful poem.
I completely agree, and I think it's a really interesting interpretation of the prompt that talks about, like, how we're a body, but we're more than that, and, like, how fascinating it is that works out. I really enjoy that. This is the third contest that Zombie Aesthetic has entered for me, and I always really enjoy the way that he puts things together. So I hope that he continues to enter my contests. Now, Mark, would you please read this next one by the Eon Letters?
We get there. I have to. Not picking it up yet.
I wonder if it didn't take when I did it. You may have to refresh.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, the forest of neon tubes. Fragments of skull with some brain loosely attached. With the skill on one piece of remembering math equations, some drenched with the pink superego. One with the muscle memory of lifting a barbell with the last skull bit of the fear center. As the goo on what the person thought would happen, happened. One bull tusk threw the jaw upwards in a rush stabbing motion with Ernest Hemingway throwing up his popcorn out of shock in the stands. The beauty of the poor matador's brain, neurons firing like a forest of neon tubes illuminating a rainbow, threw his genetics with a good gallon of blood left, awakening the living bullfighter's death. The crowd is hushed with a standstill wind as Ernie stands to run out of the stadium in fear. The skull, half awake with one minatory eye, looks in the writer's direction. End of poem.
Ooh, that was interesting. Well read. Thank you, Mark. And it says in the AN, a poem about Ernest Hemingway watching a bullfighter get gored. I wonder if that's a real thing that happened. I don't even know. Very interesting storytelling. Go ahead, Pam.
I was going to say, knowing Ernest Hemingway and the fact that he was really into stuff like that, had traveled a lot, really big into sports like bullfighting, that there's a really good chance that he did see that.
Yeah, he wrote a novel about, you know, that city where the bulls run through the street, and he wrote a novel about that, I think, or I vaguely remember that. Where they closed down the city and they turned the bulls loose and people chased them through the street, and I'm sure he saw somebody get gored. It's an interesting reference.
It is. That's a really interesting way to go with this prompt, and I'm sure that Eon Letters has probably read what Hemingway wrote and was inspired by it. The way that this is put together is so interesting. Some drenched with pink superego. It's like combining the physicality of it and the thought process that the physical brain was once capable of and no longer. The fear center that has now become a thing of fear. Very interesting way. And then Ernest Hemingway's throwing up his popcorn in the stands. That's a touch of humor in actually quite a serious right at this, considering it's like a death. It's really interesting, the forest of neon tubes illuminating a rainbow. And as someone who's looked at a lot of brain scans, I have to say that it does, it's a fascinating, thing to see it all illuminated with all the little bits that I should know what they're called and don't even anymore. But to describe it as neon tubes is really cool, and see the neurons firing. It actually is really neat to watch the thoughts spark through you. So to bring that to life in the poem is just really cool. And the one minotaur eye, that's really interesting because the minotaur with the bull head, and here we have the matador becoming almost like the minotaur, taken out by the bull. So cool. This is really creative. Mark, you read it for us wonderfully. What did you think?
It was an amazing description, and it's so beautifully written, so powerfully and strongly written. You know, like gore, being gored in the first stanza, we're seeing the fragments of skull with some brain loosely attached. It opens with this matador, who's referenced later on. That's what I got. Being gored, and as the person thought would happened, because that's always the fear. One bull, isn't that beautiful language? One bull tusk through the jaw upwards and a rush to, that's this beautiful expression there, like throughout the poem. And then it gets very ironic, this guy who stood up to the bull, and then Ernest Hemingway is the, eternal tourist watching the spectacle, kind of getting all shocked. The matadors, they're getting killed. It's kind of comic. It turns into this horrible but moving comedy of the writer there for a spectacle, just reacting, and the beauty and the tragedy of the matador's death being witnessed by the writer who throws up and runs out, and the skull, I guess, of the gored matador looking at him accusingly at the end. It was just beautiful description, beautiful tragedy, and kind of a streak of comedy woven through. Just so lovely, right?
That was a really great comment. I'm just picturing, at a lot of these kind of perhaps, I don't know, the word is maybe not arena, but the place where these things happen, and even kind of Western style restaurants and bars, there's often the heads of animals, the skulls mounted on the wall. There will be the cow head, the bull head, the various either taxidermied or more likely I'm picturing the skull. To have this kind of reverse where it's the human who plays with the bulls, who creates the situation, who now has their skull on display. It feels like a statement. Really interesting. Pam, I know you love cows based on all your profile pictures. What were you feeling?
Well, I'll be honest. I've never been a big fan of sports like bullfighting, but that's just me personally. I'm not opposed to hunting, as far as, hunting and then using the meat. I've read that they make sure to, file down the bull's horns. They, give themselves as much advantage as possible. And I'm not saying they're in the sense of danger, but anyways, my personal thoughts. Now, the poem itself, absolutely beautiful. I know Mark brought up the point about Hemingway representing the tourist, and I couldn't help but think that Hemingway in this poem was representing more than just himself, was representing a history of how humanity has loved to watch, been attracted to violent sports since ancient Greece, ancient Rome, when man and man and man and beast would be pitted against each other. And I have to agree with you, Fabiana, there's definitely a strong social commentary here about how we treat each other, how we treat animals, and what we are easily amused and distracted by. So a wonderfully intelligent write and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And I agree with you. I'm not a fan of bullfighting. And again, I'm okay with, like, hunting if all the pieces of the animal are going to be used and whatnot. But just for fun, teasing the animals does bother me. So I almost feel like this is, like, the revenge of the bull. Meow. Pam, Silk is on hold, if you can let him in the door.
All right, I will. I'm sorry, Kindle Fire shut down again, but it is getting back up, and as soon as I can, I will gladly bring Silk on.
Awesome.
I promise I'm not making him wait too long. Well, you know. gotta always make them wait a little bit. Can't help
it. I know, you know, you gotta play a little bit harder.
Throw the door open.
We're coming for you, Silk. All right. This is called Skull, Brain, Soul, and Breath by Seed Haven. I held a skull to my ear to hear the whispers of the dead, lost light and a garden of flowers that rotted while I left them to dry. I held a brain in my hand to feel the electricity that makes the soul, putting soft and resistant to fingers, flailing like forgotten flan falling. I still possess one brain and one skull of my own, and in the darkness of my own head, behold the dawn of breaking thought, light and tulip bulbs bursting. I am the spirit of my own heart, haunting the meat of my body. My bones creak and my song is breath, misting ghosts of fact and memory. I sing, my darling, I sing. End poem. Wow, I really loved that. Thank you, Seed Haven. This is so cool. I think it touches on a lot of the elements of the prompt. And to think about yourself as, like, you are the brain and the skull, but you are the, oh, where is it now? I've lost the part. The electricity, you know, kind of lights up your soul. You are part of this. Your head and your spirit and all of it is interwoven. And to describe yourself as, like, the light and tulip bulbs that are bursting, this is really creative. The song at the end, too, is a very nice touch. I love the way this flowed. It was a joy to read out loud. Mark, what were your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to make a general statement first. I'm just amazed at the wonderful poems, the talent that comes into the show, and you know, this is another example of that. It's just beautiful language. I held a skull to my ear to hear the whispers of the dead, lost light in a garden of flowers that rotted when I left them dry. And that's, you know, that's pure poetry. It's powerful poetry. It's just lovely language and imagery. And it's a beautiful meditation on, slightly comic, but deeply thoughtful, of holding a skull to my ear, holding a brain that maybe some animal's brain in the hand, and just kind of wondering that this physical feel can translate to the thought, and then bringing it home to one's own head and thought, and how you are spirit haunting the meat of the body. It's an acceptance of yourself as a both an organic creature and also a spiritual your spiritual being. It's beautifully stated, and the lovely ending, I sing, my darling, I sing, is just perfect ending for a wonderful poem.
That was a great comment. I'm really blown away by this one. I can't even quite pinpoint exactly what touched me so much about it, but I felt very connected to this. Fabler, what did you think of the poem?
Oh, I really liked it. Just that the first stanza is just sets such a beautiful tone. You know, you can picture someone pressing their ear to a skull and the flowers forming inside and then withering away once they've stopped listening. And then, you know, moving to a similar story with the brain, but then saying, but there's more to us all than that. Like, you know, there's a spirituality to it, the way the things work together to make you you and to have your thoughts. I especially like the tulips and the light bulbs, you know, both having a bulb shape, I thought was very fascinating. I just thought there's a beautiful imagery to this and also the spirituality to it. As Mark pointed out, you know, the line where they talk about haunting the meat, you know, basically, yeah, you're in a meat suit, your energy in a meat suit. I loved it, but more spiritually put than that, obviously. I just absolutely love the imagery of it. It is very well done.
Well said. And yeah, the whole meat suit thing is sort of what it is. It's like we are, I don't know how to say it nicer than that. Just read the poem. Well done. Pam, what did you think?
Well, before I comment, I would like to welcome Silk to the show. So welcome, Silk. Glad you could join us.
Silk, welcome.
My name is Pam. Fagiano, Babbler, anyone else I'm forgetting? Good to meet you all.
And Mark.
Hi, Sam.
You notice how he forgets the Mark. One guy that's on. He remembers all the ladies.
And Mark. To be fair, I haven't heard him say one word since I called in, and I'm sorry, Mark.
No.
Because the ladies have been taking up all the airwaves, but I'll hush now about that.
Mm-hmm. And they sound
we do tend to do that. But I have to agree with all of you. This is just absolutely beautiful. You know, and I love how it's got some just really, like, where it describes the brain putting soft and resistant to fingers, failing, like, gone flan, falling. I don't know, like, I feel like that's just describing the way the body and the brain fall apart at the time of death. And I have to agree that there is a sense of spirituality to it. There's a sense of a physical death, but also, as I said, the spirituality. And I really like it, where missing goals of fact and memory, I sing, my darling, I sing. It's almost like this one seems to take a slightly different tone that I really appreciate, and the idea that it's not mourning a death, a passing, but rather celebrating a life and celebrating an afterlife. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Silk, did you get to hear the poem? The mute monster head.
Yes, it does. I didn't get to hear it. But I did read over it just a little bit, and just to be clear, you're talking about the skull, brain, soul, breath poem, right? Because I called in and looked, I had to refresh, and I wasn't 100% sure, but I was pretty sure. But no, I love this stanza. I still possess one brain and one skull of my own. And in the darkness of my own head, behold, the dawn of breaking thought, lights and tulip bulbs bursting. I really dug that because she is describing thoughts as light and tulip bulbs here, or specifically as tulip bulbs growing and blossoming. And I just love that imagery and that metaphor there. And just the whole piece, I really dug it. It was very well done.
It was. Thank you, Silk. And yes, grab something. It doesn't have to be perfectly on topic. You know, whatever you feel like reading is cool.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm trying to. I think I have something on topic to that. I'm looking for it. I can't remember the name or the title of the poem, but I'm looking for it.
Awesome. Pam, will you please read the one by Peter Solway?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to. Let me just get back to Late Night Poets. There we go. And "Oh Mow My Brain" by Peter Solway. And it goes like this. Jackhammer, an obstinate cap, skull of lone grief, stuck with ghost, three-linguish computer crash, only old wall to watch paint peel if I stare long enough, light globe go off, moth without GPS, end poem.
Great read. Thank you, Pam. And Mark, would you start the comments?
Yeah. Really strong brevity. It's just this image of, loneliness, being jackhammer and obstinate cap, skull of lone grief, stuck with ghosts to relinquish. Just a very striking and deeply felt moment of loneliness and isolation that's so expressed in such strong language. Is a very, it's a very strong poem. Dealing with memories and then just sitting there without light globe go off, moth without GPS. Which is disorientation, moth without GPS, fluttering around with no direction, basically. This mind, this thought, just beautiful poem.
I agree, and I think that moth part is really key, because when the light goes out, the moth doesn't know what to do. The moth is usually drawn to the light, and I feel like the light tends to represent, like, the ideas, the thoughts, the perhaps like the spark of life within that skull. And once that life burns out, then there is no direction for the body, and it's just there. I thought that was a really interesting take from Peter. He tends to be very abstract, but this is actually I think more concrete than I normally see from him. Babbler, what were your thoughts?
I really like this. It's just brain going crazy with thinking, reminiscing, and nothing to distract him. Just staring at a wall until it's gone. And then what happens next? What does a moth do in the dark? It's hard to say. It's hard to see a moth in the dark. So I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was really great imagery, and I just loved that the piece about the moth and the light, because there's a lot of mystery in that, and people talk a lot about moths being attracted to light, but not a lot of talking about what moths do when there aren't light, and just that as an idea and a concept is maybe what happens to the human mind and or soul when the lights go out, so to speak. It's really fascinating. I could just ruminate on that for some time. So I really liked this a lot.
Well said. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Now I have a picture of a cartoon in my head of two moths sitting in the dark going, what the hell do we do now? But I thought this was an excellent brevity, and I have to agree that it is more concrete than usual. It makes me think about when somebody's elder and their mind starts to go from Alzheimer's or even somebody who feels like they're losing their mind. It's just really interesting how he gives such room for variant thoughts with only eight lines. It's definitely a strong brevity and very well done.
Agreed. And Silk, were you able to hear that one? I know I sent you away to find poems, but if you heard it, I'd love a comment. Mute Monster. We may have lost Silk. Okay. We'll
no,
come back.
I'm
mute
here.
Still
I'm sorry.
On.
I'm sorry. I was on mute. My phone, my stupid phone locked up, and then my retina scan wouldn't unlock the phone like twice in a row, so I had to type in my password, which is like 15 characters long, so it took me a second, and I'm sorry.
No worries.
But I liked it. It was a nice little brevity, which actually hit a lot of points for brevity to me, too. Especially with the last line of the first stanza. And then I really enjoyed the last little stanza here. Only old wall to watch paint peel if I stare long enough. Light globe go off without GPS. Like I said, the last two lines of both stanzas just were very impactful for how short that was. To relinquish computer crash. To me, that spoke to how we can be lost without our electronics nowadays, which is very true. I think 90% of people on the planet would be completely lost once their phones or whatever crash. And in the last line too, that really hammered it home. It's a great piece.
Thank you. I agree with your comments, although I think the computer crash thing can work on multiple levels. It's partly that we're lost without it, but also when your brain crashes, I say as a crazy person who also has, like, brain injury, it feels like a computer crash, you know? It takes a while to restart, and you work a little slower, like when the computer's frozen.
I get that as somebody who has major panic attack issues, so I totally get that.
Your poem is up now, Silk.
Okay, I'd be honored to read it. I thought this kind of fit. I couldn't find the poem I was thinking about, but this was the first one I came across that actually kind of yelled at me saying, post me, but here we go. This one's called Blessed by Fate. Her hands weave such delicate dreams across the shroud of eternity, where she reads the lay of stars and moons, plucking portents between dying suns. She casts the fates, like dice endlessly tumbling, dancing upon a table stacked with high stakes, cheating death for me. While her words spill forth from movie lips, pouring secrets that tilt the world, tricking the pits to never land snake eyes, laughing at her sister's jealousy, as their jaded hands snip the threads of mortals, her singing vibrates along the cord she cradles, mine own in her hand. As she casts the scissors aside and bathes me in her sweet songs.
That was a beautiful read and a really interesting poem. It creates such imagery of this woman who has this power. It's really, really cool. I have some friends who do, like, tarot reading and palm reading and stuff, so I'm kind of picturing, like, this tent that they work in, and I love plucking portents between dying suns, and pouring secrets that tilt the world, tricking the pips to never land snake eyes. I wish I always get snake eyes. I should, like, bet on that. I think this is really beautifully put together. It's really cool. I feel like I want to read it again to grasp everything fully, but I love it. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Thank you, Afasia. And I think you will appreciate this. That's one reason I speak up, is that this is actually based a little bit about the Wheel of Time, which I think you've read, haven't you?
I have. Many years ago.
Think Matt Cawthon on a few of those lines about the Dark One's luck and the Dark One's eyes. And, yeah. But also
yes.
It's about the three fates as well. That's all I wanted to say.
I can definitely see the fates. I recognize that right away. But it's been forever since I've read Wheel of Time, but I'm starting to see the connections there now.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out.
I read the whole thing like four times. It's my favorite series of all time. So quite a bit of my poetry kind of revolves around it. So.
Nice. All right. I have to reread it, I think. I think I read it when I was about 12. And, you know, I read a lot of adult fantasy around that age. Not adult, but I mean, like, you know, not for kids. And I think some of it went a little over my head.
I mean, the main character has, like, four lovers, so.
Right? And I feel like I didn't totally get it at that age, so I need to reread.
Yeah.
Pam, do you have a comment for Silk?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, that was a wonderful read. I remember this right from before, and it was definitely worth hearing again. Now, I never read the Wheel of Time series, but I tell you, anytime I hear Silk read one of his writes that's inspired by it, it makes me wish that I had. And just absolutely captivating. And what I like about this write is that anybody who knows the characters well is going to appreciate the nod you give towards them, and anybody who doesn't is going to enjoy the write for the simple, the wonderful use of elegant language and imagery that just grabs your attention. I really like tricking the pips to never land snake eyes, laughing at her sister's jealousy as the jaded hand snipped the threads of mortals. Very cool reference to mythology, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. And Mark, what did you think of the poem?
Yeah, I read The Wheel of Time long, long ago as a kid, and I was totally, totally into it. And that just makes me want to go back and read it again. I think I'm going to do that. It's a beautiful poem. It just it's the figure of the fate and just hanging over life. It's just so well done. I mean, in the first stand, and the technique, I'm going to comment on that. You know, the hands weave, just the feel of that first stanza, it's almost like hands moving around. The hands weave such delicate, just across this. And then the second line with the dice tumbling, I mean, just the structure and sound of that line, it's kind of a tumbling rhythm in that, and it just progresses beautifully that way. And then the ending is so original, the fates holding the thread of the life in the hands, but also singing to it, you know, with the kind of joy of life. It's just really striking and beautiful. It's a wonderful poem.
Well, thank you.
I
appreciate that. Now, and I do recommend going back and reading The Wheel of Time if you haven't read it in so long. I mean, because I think it means so much more to you as an adult than as a kid. And this poem is kind of like, there's a duality, honestly. I kind of wrote it about Matt Cawthon a little bit, but also I also wrote it about maybe on the opposite end. Like I was thinking about, because the character Matt Cawthon in the book, he's blessed by perfect luck, by perfect fate and luck. And I was just kind of looking at the opposite end, like maybe one of the fates was in love with him and just shining down upon him. So I kind of wrote it from that angle.
Yeah, but it felt like your own life too. The way it's just for anybody's life, just the pleasure, you know, the fates singing into somebody's life. That's what I got from it. Really liked it.
Right.
And I feel like it works
that.
On multiple levels. Babbler, I think you're still here with us, even though you have to go soon. Do you want to comment on Silk?
I am.
I just enjoyed the, like, this has this really cosmic casino kind of vibe going on that I really liked. Just, you know, the idea, you know, anybody can die at any time, you know, for any reason. Sometimes you know when it's coming and other times you have no idea. And I just love this personification of that gamble, like the daily gamble, and then the idea that this person has their life extended by, you know, being blessed by fate or Lady Luck or, you know, a combination thereof. I just thought it was a really interesting and intriguing piece, and it felt like, I don't know how to call it, like mystically glitzy, if that makes sense. So I enjoyed it. I thought this was a fun and intriguing piece.
It was. Thank you, Babbler.
Well, thank
and
you,
thank
Babbler.
You so much.
I appreciate that. I was on mute again, too, so thank you.
The mute monster. It was great to have you call in, Babbler. You're always welcome on the show. I understand that you're worn out, so by all means, get some rest. But I hope we hear from you again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay, I just had a dumb moment where I almost hung up because I'm like, I'm saying goodbye. Okay, bye. I can't leave my own show. This isn't totally on topic because I'm a Slacker host and I didn't write to the quote that I intended to write to, but that's okay.
I was a total Slacker host too, so it's all good.
I'm Slacker on my own show. So I'm just taking an older one that kind of involves my brain being crazy and some weird stuff. Okay, Tilted. Standing still feels like a roller coaster, car surfing upside down commotion, sitting the illusion of a chair tipping, spun round and round without motion. Body has eyes closed, flat on my back, mind feels drifting to the right, falling until the bungee cord tight bounces me back into the bed with a smack. Open eyes, logic fights the sensation of legs sinking fast in quicksand, torso tractor beam towards the sky, backwards gravity never to land. A soothing voice tells me to visualize the way the table touches my thighs. I see myself a blank gray shell, but above the still bland L dances a pink shimmering spirit who shifts and twirls uneasily. She convulses in rocking circular waves in time with my mind as it misbehaves. A seizure of the soul that casts shadow on gentle tremoring of the vessel below. Hands on my ankles, her disembodied voice declares my legs are disconnected. She can ground them if that's my choice. Settle into my body on her table protected. Her hands follow the internal currents, finding buttons I didn't know I possessed, shifting my gears, driving my pain away, soothing neural pathways gone astray, silently correcting imbalances assessed, shifting molecules in tiny increments. I am never more physically present as I am on her massage table. I am never so aware of my spirit and my mind so stable, not uneasy, although not pleasant. She leaves me to process. I am still for the first time in days, my mind free of the spinning days. Tears release the built-up excess. End poem. Pam, will you leave comments? I feel weird asking for comments on my own.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be happy to. And Mark, your thoughts?
I just thought it was beautiful. I thought it was on theme. This experience of consciousness and the internal currents, finding buttons I didn't know I possessed. I thought it was
just a lovely exploration of just consciousness and how the circuitry and how the connection to reality. In a massage session is what I got. The hands, somebody massaging the narrator, and I'm releasing all this deep physical sensual feeling that's also therapeutic and curative. That deep connection. It was lovely and just a lovely exit from the poem. I just thought the whole poem was beautiful in the way rhyme and language, and then the end. I am still, for the first time in days, my mind feel free of the spinning days. Tears release the built up excess. That's just beautiful. Great poem.
Thank you. It's craniosacral therapy. It's sort of like, it's done by a massage therapist, but instead of going for your muscles, they go for your nerves, pressure points, and organs. It's like a special when you're all messed up kind of therapy, but it works on multiple levels, so I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Great comment there, Mark. And Silk, your thoughts? And Silk, your thoughts off of mute.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone, it locks up after a couple minutes of no activity, and it's kind of a bitch to get back in. But I could tell you're really passionate about this, right? To Aphasiana, that it was something that affected you, and honestly, I had to get up for a few minutes, so I didn't get to read along to the whole thing. But I did listen, and I tried to listen very closely, and what really affected me was close to the end, where you said something about never being present, or never being more present, I think you said, as when you are laying on this table, and something about being spiritually aware and physically aware, I think you said anyway. That's at least how it hit me, and I think it was towards the end of the poem, and that really got to me, and I could really follow that too, because when I was younger, honestly, my first girlfriend was my first major love was a total witch and into energies, manipulation, and she taught me a lot and showed me a lot, and it's very real. And that's what this poem made me think of, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Excellent comment. So, yeah, I really like this. I like how you just, it's beautifully honest, the way that you talk about this, and when you read the poem, you can hear the emotion in your voice, and you know you can tell that you kind of, I don't know if it's a sense of peace, but there's definitely a sense of, I don't know, feeling more secure, finding yourself, even kind of a sense of peace. You can tell that this is one of those moments in life where you feel secure, and the way you talk about the imagery, and even the way you talk about the imagery of vertical, like, you know, spinning in the car and all that, is just really just strong in imagery and very well done.
Thank you. Shauna's amazing. I go see her once a month now, and the first time we ever met, I was disassociating, so I have this problem where sometimes I'm, like, outside of my body, and I can, like, see myself. So I walk in, and she's like, "You're not in there." And I'm like, "What?" And she's like, "Just a second." And she touches my head, and she goes, "Oh, yeah, this is no good. Just a sec." She throws me down on the table, and she adjusts my neck, and it was like I got sucked back into my body. And she was like, "Oh, that's better. Okay, good." And then she was like, "Why are you on a boat?" And I've been having, like, this rocking feeling, like, forever. And she was just like, oh, that's not right. Can I? And I'm just like, sure, whatever. And so she kind of sticks her hand, like, up my spine and does this weird little twitch. And then I stopped, like, rocking. Like, I had been rocking for months, and I never have again after she did that. So I'm just like, you're magical.
Oh, wow.
I love you.
Oh, my gosh. That's just
Shauna's
amazing.
Shauna's the best.
Quite a story.
And, yeah, she says it's science, but my husband calls her the witch.
No, I get that aphasia. Like I said, I seem really drawn to witches. It's like every woman I've ever been involved with or drawn to, except one, has been a witch of some kind. And so I totally understand and get.
That's cool. Mark, will you please read the poem by SLR8313? Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm looking for it on the board again. I guess I need to refresh the Oh, all right. I see it. An heirloom. There's a flash. It's in his eyes. Present, alert, connected. He says, how are you? To your dismay, he's gone again in a fraction of a second. But I saw him, and he saw me in memories. But it hurts revisiting us. You've drifted away again in a blank stare. I smooth out the wrinkles of my old apron. Its ruffle is torn. This thing's an heirloom. Walking to the fridge, a drawer is yanked open for a spoon and shut. She places a little table in front of him, opens the yogurt container, and hands him the spoon. She sits back down, adjusts the recliner. There she gathers her embroidery, stitching beautiful blooming flowers. End of poem.
Thank you for that, Reed. So I interpret this as being about someone with dementia, or some form of, like, he's not quite there mentally anymore. And there's that little bit of hope when he has that flash in his eyes, and it's like the old him seems to be back, but then he's not. And once again, he only is a memory, really. His body is still there with her, but it's like he's empty of who he used to be. And that can be a really painful way to lose someone, to lose them before you even fully lose them. And I feel like that's expressed really interesting and powerful here. When it talks about the apron being an heirloom and everything's kind of like older and it's like he is an antique that she's keeping around, but it's no longer in use almost. Like I'm not saying it properly, but it's like he's gone. And really with the prompt that we're talking about, like skull is just something holding the real you within. In this case, it feels like he's not in there anymore. And that's just, it's so sad. I'm kind of speechless. Pam, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I have to agree with what you said, Aphasiana. It is sad. It hits hard. And I think what makes it even more sad is the fact that there's that brief flash of memory and that sense of hope. And I really like how the language is just beautifully simple, everyday language. And you just picture this woman who has this brief second of hope, few seconds of hope, and then realizes that things are going back the way it was, and it just becomes her doing what she can to distract herself from the sadness, well, whatever it was she was doing. Sorry, I walked away. What was she doing? It was a sewing thing. I'm sorry, gosh. Embroidery.
Embroidery.
Yeah. Yes, and using her embroidery to distract herself and to create something beautiful in her life. Very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Silk, what did you think? I'm guessing he's trying to unlock the phone.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to unlock my phone. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I enjoyed this poem. It had a deep, aching quality to it. And I've talked to Essel R a couple of times. I don't know her well. But I think this is a really good piece by her. Especially, her beginning was great. There's a flash in his eyes, present, alert, connected. He says, "How are you?" I mean, that kind of draws you right in. It's kind of like a great start to a story or to a book. I've been taking a few classes on creative writing on fiction, and getting right to the dialogue is a great way to start a piece. And with all that imagery, and boom, it sucks you right in. And I also liked the way it portrayed your feelings here. It was a little dark, but it also was longing. And it portrayed, I think, that feeling that most people get of longing for something they don't have right now, which is a little dark and also a little good. And I enjoyed it.
That was a great comment. And I want to read some of your fiction when you pass that class. Mark, would you like to comment?
I'm not sure if you want to read in my fiction now. I have some, but
send me
hopefully
stuff.
Hopefully I can start writing some better fiction now. So. Hopefully. Because I usually end up getting to about page 60 to 80 and giving up when I try to write a novel. So
I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Is it a fantasy novel, like Wheel of Time or something?
A couple. Yeah. Usually I write about fantasy. Usually it's fantasy. Mm-hmm. I have one erotic piece that I've been working on, but that's hush hush. But yeah, mostly it's fantasy.
Yeah, well, I'd like to read some. Okay, so Mark, your thoughts on the poem?
Yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. Just everybody's kind of remarked on the imagery and the moving quality of it, and Pam mentioned the simple but strong short lines and describing the situation. And just the feeling of this kind of despairing intimacy of somebody gone. And the metaphor is pretty interesting metaphor of the old apron and heirloom being worn out, reflecting the situation. The life is getting worn out and the care is wearing her out, taking care of the person. And just getting very hard and getting worn out, hanging on to this memory. But what really moved me was the ending. I'm not kidding. It brought tears to my eyes. It really did. How she sits down and this worn out apron and fabric, and then she starts creating really beautiful new fabric. Not just the deep intimacy of the moment, because there's still deep beauty in what she's doing for this person. And the bond that still exists. It's really beautiful. Lovely poem.
Well said. And Pam, the audio we were just talking about, sneakily in the background, would you please play that for me?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Just another Vanity Fair on the wall, the empty-headed bed, or looking through the thick paint, the frame telling of gold, the black and greens touched by dark blues cold, waters and oils and paint lit to speak to us, to me, golden eras, lost. And dark ages we trust to make our worlds for the skies, for the moons, for the planets, for the stars we adored. They were guiding us, they were telling us, showing us ways to explore. When I'll see all this accomplished, I will be a senseless kid, caring less and less about all theories on life and death. On wars and blood, on endless fights I ran away from. Vanity Fairs, not my Vanity Fairs, dead and buried on life and death stories, on wars and blood, teaching us, giving us lessons no more. Just another memory on a wall.
That was such a cool audio. Thank you, Theo. It didn't have the exact same words as the written poem, so at first I was like, oh no, it's the wrong one. But then the second half, it was connected. So it was really well read. It had kind of like the music in the background that just felt like it set the tone. Really interesting poem here. I like the end of just another memory on the wall. The way that the colors are described, the black and green touched by dark blue, and the difference between like the water paint and the oil paint, and the way that that represents the different people and feelings. Golden eras lost, and dark ages we trust. And while there are definitely eras and dark ages in terms of history, I think within each life there are kind of dark periods and then the kind of golden days that we think on as like the great times, even though they weren't always. Sometimes we have this like fake nostalgia within ourselves where we like to gloss over a certain part of our life and make it seem like it was the good times. I thought this was really interesting, and I loved the way that she read it. Silk, what were your thoughts?
I'd have to say what I was typing in her to give her a comment that this was a powerful poem that spoke of truths that not very many people know of nowadays. I loved the last stanza, her finish in particular, Vanity Fairs, not my Vanity Fairs. Dead and buried on life and death stories, on wars and blood, teaching us, giving us lessons no more. I, just another memory on a wall. And that is such great truth. I mean, no matter how powerful what our story is, no matter how many people it affects, we die and it fades. And what really lingers is how we lived, who we affected, how they remember us. And that's really how that hit me. And I just love this piece, honestly. This is a fantastic poem, in my opinion. That's all I got to say.
That was a great comment. Thank you. And Mark, what did you think?
I just, it's really beautiful, Theo's poetry. This is a really good example, this kind of deeply, deep, beautiful images, this dramatization and, you know, the great read. This is the slightly off-balance creativity that's also, you know, very surely poised to it's in control. Just the lovely kind of meditation on experience and capture the – I love the repetition of the when I see all this accomplished, I will be a senseless kid. That's repeated again later on, and it's just kind of like a deep philosophical song on experience and memory and what we undergo and what we're left with, giving us at the end, giving us lessons no more, just another memory on the wall. It was really beautiful.
Nicely put. Thank you, Mark. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. I have to agree with everyone. This is, it's beautiful. It does have a certain meditative quality, a certain quality that looks back on history and looks back at our personal history. And as you mentioned, Fabiana, those time periods where we remember only good in those time periods that feel like they're the darkest parts of our life that we ever lived through. And I really like how she kept saying my vanity. She kept mentioning the Vanity Fair. You know, and of course, you think of the magazine, but then you also think of the way, at fairs, like, you know, animals get put up for display. There's also this sense of feeling like you're put on display. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And would you please read the one by Pink Fairy 5 that I just put on the board?
Oh, absolutely. I enjoy reading Pink. And back there, Anne. My Skull is on Grayscale by Pink Fairy 5, and it goes like this. Like O'Keefe's cow skulls, mine will one day be desolate, languishing in a ditch, desert, or crematorium, depending upon my demise of choice. Right now it might as well be in the bowels of a ditch, for I have not used it for years, paying it no extra attention, sitting in front of a TV with a dead face desperately clicking. My skull is as grayscale as the westerns of the 60s. My brain knows in a vague, uncaring, whose isn't kind kind of way. So here I sit with the remote aimlessly clicking, hoping to find something new on the boob tube, my mind rolling, her eyes in dismay. End poem.
Great read. Thank you, Pam. This is quite dark, but I think it's beautiful at the same time. To think of it as like, I don't know, the darkness is just thinking of herself as a corpse in the ditch or the desert or the crematorium. And there's this kind of suicidal nature to it because it's depending on my demise of choice. It almost sounds like it's she's going to be choosing the demise. And the idea that she hasn't really used her head in forever because, you know, just staring at the TV, not really doing anything, clicking, kind of brings to mind like kind of scrolling through your phone absently, not really paying attention to anything. My skull is grayscale as the westerns of the 60s. It's like there's no color, there's no life, there's no excitement anymore. And there's this kind of sad monotoneness to everything, vague, uncaring. It's really a depressing poem, but she does it in an intelligent way that I really enjoy. And she usually has a little bit more optimism in her work. So I don't think this is really her personally here in this poem. I think she's taking on a storytelling element, thankfully, which is really well done. It would be super convincing if I didn't already see her other work. Mark, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said. Well, I know her, I've read a lot of her other works, and there's explosive energy, all kinds of moods. I don't see this as her at all, except maybe in a temporary mood. This is more to me, like you pointed out, this is more to me like a meditation on somebody in a final phase of life. It's remarkable imagery. When I saw the prompt the first time, I thought of O'Keeffe, you know, who painted the cow skulls in a desert with a rose in them. I thought the prompt suggested something like that, and Pink picked up on it here and expressed it beautifully. The skull out in the desert, evoking that art, which is just beautifully express the state of mind on the verge, boundary between life and death. And I thought that just the way of expressing it's pretty unusual. That line, "My skull is as grayscale as the westerns of the 60s, that's a really unusual expression, and it's totally beautiful too. It's just great language and just very well described poem. Very strong poem.
I agree. Now, Pam, you read it. Would you also like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I like that she explored into the arena of somebody who's become so depressed that, you know, all they do is sit around and think about what their death is going to be like and aimlessly watch TV. I thought the use of the boob tube was great because, you know, that just really fits well with the whole theme. And I think it makes a wonderful commentary on and how important it is to keep our brains active, to, you know, keep learning new things and expose ourselves to new thoughts. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Now, Silk, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, if I can get off mute here. I dug this poem. I like the whole idea of the grayscale, too. Especially in her last stanza here, "My skull is grayscale as the western 60s. My brain knows in a vague, uncaring, whose isn't kind of way. So here I sit with a remote, aimlessly clicking, hoping to find something new. In the boob tube, my mind rolling, her eyes in dismay. To me, this spoke to me very heavily, because I have days like this, honestly, where I feel like this. I mean, and she described it perfectly in that last stanza, where you just feel like you've been living every day over and over and over, and there's nothing new, and there's no hope, there's no anything. I mean, like what's the fucking point in living? To me, that's how that felt. It felt very deeply depressed to me in that last stanza, like way more than it conveyed, because honestly, reading it the first time through, to me, it seemed like it just kind of a little bit down, not very much, but to me this seemed like a in the pits of hell depression kind of stanza that was very well hidden, because I know exactly what she's feeling here. And like I said, I know that feeling, because I've had it, I've conquered it, and anybody who has conquered that, they do feel it over and over, and I totally get that. But I really enjoyed the piece. And I hope I didn't read way too much into it and just kill the show with
You really, like, that was insightful, and I appreciate you sharing. That was awesome. I mean, it's not awesome that you've felt that way, obviously. I'm sorry. But I think that it's great to share that and let people know that they're not alone in those feelings.
Very true.
So thank you. Silk, would you please read the one by Daniel?
Sure thing. Let me go back to the group and find it here. Okay, Daniel, I've got it. Opening now, if I can. Okay. The Tragedy of Mind by Daniel Deschino. The Tragedy of Mind. What tragedy of mind will haunt me today? Which part of the fool am I destined to play? I shelter in place with my arrogant lies that dominate thoughts under factual guise. Sorry. All facts can't be criminal. Some must be correct. But which can I trust and which are suspect? This puzzle of mine brings me closer to insane, or brings me close to insane. In a world so elusive, with a mind so in pain. A poor mental scribe, I wander the land, a new world each day to misunderstand. I think myself brave with my journey of age, but knowledge and wisdom share a similar stage. The enemy may tear the unfamiliar apart, but true evil preys on what is dear to my heart. I grasp all I know, though the evolved gift of senses. In a way, cruelty made with undetectable senses. My eyes to perceive, but only after it's gone. My ears only hear once the sound is withdrawn. Taste, just a prisoner of craving's tight clutch. And feel, just a mess of the illusion of touch. Am I able to fix this cruel, lifelong delusion, or is delusion itself my only conclusion? The only tool that I have to fix of what I have spoken is the very same tool that I have tragically broken. And I am not sure if I should take comfort or shame in the fact that I am human. And we are all the same. And all.
That was a really great read. Thank you, Silk. It was great. I think it really suited your voice. This was wonderful, Daniel. I thought that you did a great job at bringing these feelings to life. I liked a poor mental scribe, I wander the land, a new world each day to misunderstand. I feel you there. And the enemy may tear the unfamiliar apart, but the true evil preys on what is dear to my heart. Yes, the unfamiliar can be scary, but to lose what you love is really difficult. This is just... really interesting, the cruel lifelong delusion, or is delusion itself my only conclusion? This really is thought-provoking. I feel like I kind of spin in circles following these ideas. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really liked this one. I thought it flowed beautifully. It definitely had a lot of thoughts to take in. I really liked how kind of had a touch of mythology, or medieval ages, with the scribe wandering around, but it also very much fit into the realm of reality and that idea that we all struggle to find ourselves and we all struggle to accept that we have a humanity that has a weakness. And so I just think this is an excellent write and very well done.
I agree. And Mark, what did you think?
Just wonderfully written poem, this figure wandering around trying to understand the world, but also his own mind. And this puzzle of mind brings me close to insane. I'm trying to wander around reality. I'm this mental scribe, this fool figure. I'm haunted by this tragedy and of life. I'm trying to look at the world and figure out what's true and not, and understand how my own mind processes things. It just describes who we are and what we go through, that we're in the clutch of our own taste, just a prisoner of cravings type clutch. We're in the wandering around trying to make things out and invaded by our own desires. Just a lovely description of consciousness and life and where we are in the universe. Beautiful poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Mark. And Silk, you read it really well for us. Would you also want to tell us about how you felt as you read it? His phone is not accepting his eye again.
Yeah, that's what it
still
seems like.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yes, I hear you now.
Okay, I am sorry. Yeah, it definitely was not liking my trying to get off mute at all there. But I really dug this. That had great rhyme, first of all. It had that kind of rhyming cadence that lends itself to a very well-done story, because a story that rhymes very well is a great story to me, because it just goes bam, 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 bam. And I really enjoyed reading this as well, because, yeah, it was great. I loved every bit of it. I'm trying to just pick out a couple of lines or something here, but I really can't. Like I said, I love the feeling of this. It's powerful all the way through. And I just loved it. I can't pick one single thing to read above anything else, because it was just the whole piece as a whole, like I said, just it all flowed great together, and I can't really, it's like trying to pick one part of a river.
It's true. It's really hard to pick that apart. That's a really nice way of putting that. Yeah, it was a great poem. This is going to be a really hard contest to judge, because I've liked everything. It's going to be like awards for everyone. Sometimes I have to do that. I just send everyone points, and then I wonder why I have no points. But it's because I'm like, oh, well, they all should win.
I've done that twice, honestly, on contests for the shows, so don't feel bad if you've done it. I have done that twice. Send everybody points.
It's so hard to pick. Especially when I did those Beat Wars contests for Rap Free, I'm like, if you made an audio, you deserve it.
I hear
I'm
that.
A softie.
I can't. I am not great at rapping, but I do make audios now and then.
I think you could do it. You underestimate yourself.
I'll have to practice.
And even if you can't, I mean, I can't, and I still do it.
I have
heard
few raps
rap
on my SoundCloud.
Hey,
they're just
haven't I heard you
though.
Rap before?
Horrible. Yes, but they're horrible, Miss Pam. I mean,
they sounded pretty
I
good to
so,
me,
yeah.
And that was years ago. Yeah, I mean, I remember
well,
3 or 4
years ago
hearing you rap.
Well, I will take your word for it, because I will never argue with Mistress Pam. I am
well,
not
that
brave.
Is, that's what makes you one of the smarter men I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Good,
I don't want to.
Good.
Exactly. You don't want to end up in the bad part of Pam's dungeon. That's just nowhere you want to be?
There is no bad part of Pam Shenton.
Oh, yes, there is. But I won't say anything because, yeah, because I don't want to end up there. So, yeah.
Pam, we still have to open our bakery / burlesque place together, and she's going to be the have the dungeon.
Oh, that would be, that would be fun.
Okay. So next week.
Are you guys
going
to have BDSM themed donuts? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, well, Pam kept writing these really, like, naughty but food-related poems, and I was like, Pam, I feel very confused about whether I'm hungry or horny. Like, what are you doing to me? And I'm like, okay, well, we're going to make, like, a menu.
Pam does that to me, too. I can't tell if I'm hungry, horny, or both. Well, I mean,
So I told her she had to have a naughty bakery, and then it just kind of evolved from there.
As long as it's not decaf coffee, I mean, I'm cool, you know.
Yep.
Did you, okay, Fabiana, since you got only like a minute left, do you want to just save your next write for like next week?
Oh, yeah, that was just if we needed it, so yeah, I'm not going to read that. I'm just going to say the contests that are open. So for Thursday's show, we need some more writes. And that's for my show with Dexter, Double Helix. The prompt is, knowing how to be solitary is central to the art of loving. When we can be alone, we can be with others without using them as a means of escape. And that was by Bell Hooks. And then for next Friday, we have, some nights the wolf inside me shrinks to nothing. She bares her teeth and runs away. The dragon in my chest rejects me. She's so tired of being slain. There are nights when the lioness cowers, says she can't fight it another day. What about the phoenix? She sits with me in the darkness. She whispers, we'll rise, just you wait, by SRW Poetry. So those are the quotes that you can write to be on my next two shows, and I hope that some of you come back for that. Thank you so much to Babbler, Mark, and Silk, and Pam for calling in, sharing your voices and comments, and thank you to everybody who wrote for the contest, and to Phil for giving me this time on the air so I can babble away and enjoy the poetry. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Stay tuned, everybody.